6 case this morning, O'Connor Spinner versus Michael Astor.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. This is a Social Security disability case. In this case, Laquita O'Connor Spinner is disabled by a combination of physical and emotional problems. The physical problems, there's no dispute about. We don't dispute the ALJ's findings of what she is physically impaired by, nor do we dispute his findings on how impaired she is. It is worth noting that he found that she has degenerative disc disease in the lumbar spine. She has sleep apnea that causes fatigue, that causes distractions. She has carpal tunnel syndrome that causes limitations with her abilities to handle and finger. She has lung disease that causes shortness of breath. All of those things are not disputed. And even as the commissioner has conceded in his brief, the combination of physical and emotional impairments found by the ALJ result in a highly restrictive number of sedentary jobs that she can do. So she's, you know, just by being limited to sedentary jobs, she's quite limited. And then even within the sedentary job base, it is significantly eroded, and that is undisputed as well. What is at issue here are, there are really two issues, either one of which make appropriate and necessary a remand of this case. One is that the state agency's consulting psychologist, Dr. Unversaw, made some findings that were not addressed by the ALJ in the ALJ's decision. The second one is that the second issue is that the ALJ found that Mrs. O'Connor Spinner is moderately limited in with respect to concentration, persistence, or pace, but then he did not assign any job-related limitation as a result. So those are two different issues. They're similar. There's a little bit of overlap in some of the discussion, actually, but they're two different issues, either one of which makes necessary a remand. As far as Dr. Unversaw's opinion, or opinions, rather, there are three, and these are found in pages 265 to 267 of the record on a form that is a Social Security form. And at the second page of that form, in a section that calls for summary conclusions, Dr. Unversaw wrote that Mrs. O'Connor Spinner is moderately limited in her ability to accept instructions, not follow instructions, that's a separate thing, but accept instructions. This is under the social interactions section of that form. Also, Mrs. O'Connor Spinner is moderately limited in her ability to accept criticism from supervisors. And then on the third page of that form, Dr. Unversaw notes that Mrs. O'Connor Spinner gives back, I guess, what she gets from other people. If others are rude to her, she is rude to them. Now, those are three significant, when you're talking about already a very limited range of jobs available to a person, those are three very significant limitations.
Why can't she take, one of the jobs mentioned was hand packer. And why can't she do that? I notice on page 14 of your brief, you're a little less sure that she can't perform that than the cashier and telephone solicitor job, just by the way you phrase it. Why can't she do that job?
Well, she is limited, even, again, by the ALJ's limitations, physical limitations, which we do not dispute, she is limited to no more than frequent handling and fingering. The job of hand packer, according to the Selected Characteristics of Occupations, which is a book that's put out by the Department of Labor and accepted by Social Security, says that that job of hand packer requires constant handling and fingering. She's not, again, by the ALJ's assessment, she is not physically able to do the job of hand packer.
Turning to the vocation, the question posed to the vocational expert, you seem to concede that what you need here is a bright line rule, as you put it in the reply brief. Do you really need a bright line rule that says that you can't, that you must specifically hone in on ability to concentrate, persistence, and pace, as opposed to phrasing the question in terms of simple repetitive tasks?
That's an excellent question, and I don't really, I mean, I don't go to sleep at night wishing for it. But I think the problem here, frankly, is that there have been two lines of cases from this court, and I've looked and looked and looked at those cases to try to distinguish them, to try to make them all, you know, to be able to reconcile them. I can't do it. I mean,
there may be some cases where talking about simple repetitive tasks, but not explicitly mentioning inability to concentrate or persistence or pace, really isn't important given the particular disability of the individual.
Okay.
But in other cases, simply talking about simple repetitive tasks may not, in fact, focus the vocational expert on the ability to concentrate or the need for persistence or pace. And I guess your job is really to tell us, you know, why is this particular individual's disability one where the vocational expert had to be focused on the need for concentration, persistence, pace, as opposed to simply told she can do simple repetitive tasks.
Yeah, and I think with the limitation on the ability to concentrate and persist and keep up the pace, that's simply a different limitation from saying this person can only do simple work. Because concentration, persistence.
Well, what is the disability that this particular person suffers
from? She's been diagnosed with depression.
Okay.
Now, she also has, and this is why I guess I'm not contesting that she does need to have simple, routine, repetitive tasks, because she does have a high school degree, but there are a couple references in the record at page 130 and 137 about she needed special ed to get that. So I think the special ed needs and just the intellectual wherewithal limits her to simple and repetitive and routine things. She is mentally able to do simple, routine, repetitive, but
complex. Well, why do we have to focus the VE on her inability to concentrate, the need for persistence, the need for keeping pace? In her case, do we need that?
Because if she has that problem, and if she has that problem, if her concentration is limited to such an extent that she can only, say, concentrate for 25 to 30 minutes at a time before she has to go off task, that's very significant to a vocational expert. If she can't keep up the pace, even if it's maybe not a quota job, but even non-quota jobs still have a pace.
But then the next step, it seems to me, is why is a person with depression do we have to be particularly worried about one's ability to concentrate, one's ability to be persistent, one's ability to keep up a pace?
And I think that's true because depression being an emotional, not a mental capacities kind of condition, but an emotional problem that causes one to have difficulty focusing. Your mind tends to wander. You tend to just kind of shut down. I think depression leads to problems with concentrating.
So your argument is that here, at least, it was necessary to focus on those particular.
Yes, absolutely. I see I'm well into my rebuttal time, so I'll sit down for now. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. May it please the Court, James Guerin for the Commissioner. As this Court is well aware, and as you, Judge Tender, have suggested in your questioning, the...
I'm Judge Ripple.
Judge Ripple.
Judge Tender's 10 years younger, so we've got to give...
As you suggested in your questioning, the issue of evaluating the effects of mental impairments on a claimant's ability to perform work is probably one of the more difficult tasks that an ALJ is faced with. And most of these cases are actually quite complex. They involve evidence pointing in different directions and competing opinions and so on. This is not one of those cases. This is not complex. However, in all of the cases, no matter what the degree of complexity, the commissioner has prescribed a procedure that the agency will follow to evaluate the effects of mental impairments on the ability to work. And the procedure works something like this, and I think this addresses all of Mr. Vrana's concerns with the ALJ's decision. The initial question, which corresponds with steps 2 and 3 of the sequential evaluation process, is sort of an up-down evaluation of whether the claimant has a severe mental impairment, and if it's severe, whether it's essentially disabling. And that is, if there are no significant limitations, it will not be deemed severe. If there are, the agency will find that the claimant meets a listing. Now, that analysis is taken care of with what's called the special technique. And it's documented in the record, in this case, by Dr. Unversaw, on what's called the Psychiatric Review Technique Form, or the PRTF, at page 261. The way the special technique works at steps 2 and 3 is that the agency considers the claimant's mental impairment in terms of 4 very broad areas of functioning. And if the claimant has, and 2 of those areas that are relevant in this case are concentration and social functioning. If the claimant has only mild limitations in all 4 of those areas, then he'll generally be found not to have a severe impairment. If, on the other hand, he has marked limitations or greater in 2 or more of those broad areas, he'll be found to he'll generally be found to meet a listing. Now, or to meet the severity of a listing. Probably most of the cases are not disposed of at either step 2 or step 3, and instead they move beyond that. And at this point, the agency is required to determine what sorts of limitations are imposed by these impairments and how they affect the claimant's ability to work. And at that point, in this case, Dr. Unversaw completed a residual functional capacity form for mental impairments at pages 265 and 66. And that form includes 20 areas of functioning that the doctor is supposed to consider. It's a worksheet, as we explained in our brief, and as this court also noted in its decision in Johansson. This is a worksheet that documents that the doctor has considered all of these areas that the agency considers important before reaching an ultimate conclusion as to what the claimant's limitations are. In this case, out of the 20 areas of functioning, Dr. Unversaw found that 18 of them, in 18 of those, Ms. O'Connor Spinner was not significantly limited. In 2 of those, she was moderately limited. One of the areas, the broader areas of the worksheet limitations, is concentration, sustained concentration and pace. Now, out of the 8 subsections, I should just point out that seven of those, the ALJ and Dr. Unversaw found that the claimant was not significantly limited. Dr. Unversaw found only one of them she was moderately limited, which was her ability to maintain attention and concentration for extended periods. Now, there's a question about how this would affect her pace. I'd just like to point out very briefly that Dr. Unversaw also said that checked boxes indicating that she could carry out very short and simple instructions, she could carry out detailed instructions, she could perform activities within a schedule, maintain regular attendance, be punctual, and so on. The same thing under social interaction. Again, there were 5 areas under that section, and 4 of those she was not significantly limited, and in one she was, under ability to accept instruction and respond appropriately to criticism from supervisors. Dr. Unversaw, after considering all 20 of these factors, then recorded his RFC finding, his conclusion as to what work restrictions Ms. O'Connor Spinner should have, and he concluded that she could perform moderately complex work-related tasks. That was his ultimate conclusion. The ALJ tracked the doctor's reasoning from the beginning to the end. This is almost a perfect description or example of the correct application of the agency's procedure for this. And the ALJ, in fact, of course, is ultimately responsible for coming up with the final RFC. That's not a medical determination. It's made by the ALJ. And the ALJ, in this case, as the district court found, actually came up with a more restrictive RFC than Dr. Unversaw did. Again, Dr. Unversaw said that she could perform moderately complex work. The ALJ said, no, we'll limit it to routine and repetitive work tasks and only simple instructions. This is uncontradicted. The findings of Dr. Unversaw are not contested by Ms. O'Connor Spinner, and the ALJ followed the procedure exactly as he was required to do, and for that reason, we ask the court to affirm the ALJ's decision and the commissioner's decision. If there are no questions,
don't believe so, Kyle.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Verana.
We've heard some in the brief and in the argument about that the first 2 pages of this form are simply a worksheet trying to minimize its impact. What the instructions are for those first 2 pages, this section is for recording summary conclusions derived from the evidence in the file. Each mental activity is to be evaluated within the context of the individual's capacity to maintain that activity over a normal work day and work week on an ongoing basis. So I don't think those 2 pages can be so easily dismissed. Likewise, on the 3rd page of that form, the commissioner is focusing on the very last line or the last paragraph of that, but before that is where Dr. Unversaw talks about that Mrs. O'Connor Spinner can get rude to others if they get rude to her, which, of course, is very important in most jobs, certainly the telemarketer or telephone solicitor and cashier. As far as this being more restrictive, the ALJs, in some ways it was more restrictive, in other ways it was not. I see my time is up. I thank you very much.
Your Honor, you took this case by appointment, did you?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.